hurry it.
Welcome to the Pintcast. I'm joined today by... Oh, really? This is how it's going to go. This is how it's going to start. This is how we're starting. That would be Joseph, the one...
3 seconds in and we...
The only... Mr. I Hate Your Club. Follow him on Twitter, at I Hate Your Club. The Chilangooner, who now goes by the handle SD Goon, Luis. And welcome to the fold, Brent. You can follow him on Twitter at GFT_Brent. Welcome all. It's a pleasure to have you. Well, some of you.
Welcome. Yeah, nice to be here.
It is a pleasure to be here, Joaquin.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to finally have you
just
here,
so you
Luis.
Know. I'm going to enjoy this one because I know I'm going to get banned.
Banned for life. Yeah.
So just know that.
You almost got banned before we started.
He's got a point.
That's
got
to be a record.
It's up there.
Yeah, you're doing quite well. We're going to start with a little ditty I wrote about the Germans in the Champions League. The Germans came and demolished the Spanish whose game was so polished. Real were put to the sword while Barcelona were gored. Tito exposed as a fraud, Mourinho no longer a god. Dortmund's play inspired the masses while Bayern spanked those asses. Wembley, prepare your best beers to drink from the cup with big ears. Elfine, or how do they say it in German? Die something. All right, that's it. Die Leader Golzen.
Die Leader Golzen.
That's all I got. Anyways, let's start with, since we're on that subject, we're going to start with the Champions League. We've had...
Your vibrator is going off.
Sorry. I put it in my pants, so every time I receive a tweet, it'll be extra vibracious. See, I'm making up words on the go.
Mm-hmm.
So the results kind of, I mean, considering the first leg, we got what we expected in the second leg in terms of final outcomes. I mean, the team... The Germans that took the lead in the beginning finished it off. But let's start with Madrid against Dortmund. Brent, any thoughts on that match in particular?
It was just one of those strange games that Madrid just took a while to get going. It was like the complete opposite of the other game where Barcelona started out well and then just kind of quit. Real Madrid didn't seem to show up.
Hold on. They had like three chances to score in like the first.
After the first 15 minutes.
Okay.
After the first 15 minutes, basically, Michael Essien was about the only person who looked playing well up until about 10 minutes left in the game. I think Real Madrid came out and said, you know, we're going to go at them. And, you know, they expected to get one goal or something pretty early on. And when they came out and pretty much dominated that 15 minutes and Dortmund was able to withstand it, I think you saw a Real Madrid team kind of sit back and say, okay, now we don't know what to do. And it played out kind of that it was somewhat of a neutral game, I think, and played out that way for most of the game up until Real kind of got their act together, but it was a little, you know, it was too little too late for them.
Yeah, they. I mean, I thought they kind of came out of the gates really hot. I mean, I don't know how they missed those chances, especially Ozil's. You know, the one that he missed that goal near post. And I mean, except that was like the third clear chance in a row. I mean, I know Weidenfeller made that good save, but Cristiano kicked it right into his chest. But it, you know, literally there were three one-on-ones with the keeper in those opening few minutes. But you're right. Once they weathered that storm, they seemed to have, you know, put it together well enough to where. You know, they worked their way back into the game. I think after about 20 minutes, Dortmund really worked their way back into it. And I thought they looked really comfortable all the way up until those last 10 minutes or so. But it was an entertaining affair. I mean, the last few minutes, I mean, I do follow Dortmund, and I was just I wanted them to get that one goal just to kill it off, but that was it was nail biting at the end. What do you think, Luis?
No, I thought the Madrid performance was pretty typical of a team who's 4-0 down in a tie.
4-1.
Yeah, right. 4-1. Sorry, I get the two score lines mixed up. Came out in the first 15 minutes, as Brent said, just storming, and they had at least, from what I saw, three clear goal scoring opportunities. And at that point, had they taken all of them, it would have been a tie match, and had them advancing on the away goal. But teams tend to, if they don't end up putting away those early chances in a tie like this, they end up kind of reaching a point where they run out of answers. And that's when, like Brent said, they just kind of went stale. Michael Essien kind of stood out to me as well. It's a game where you like a player like Cristiano. I'm not sure you could ask much more from him. You saw him trying to do more than he probably should have. But at the same time, I mean, you look at Madrid's lineup, and you want to just say how did they not score with players of this caliber? Even Modric, I thought, played pretty decent the whole game. I think Dortmund knew what to expect. I think they knew they were going to get just an all-out assault, and that they were just pretty much going to play on the counter. They just had to absorb that first initial 20 minutes of pressure, and after that, they seemed pretty comfortable the rest of the game, and until at the end, Real Madrid got a couple goals.
I thought they defended really well, you know, for at least for the first 80 minutes of the match. I mean, assured right. defending, great tackling, everything was well timed. I mean, they played it to a T for you know, long span of the match. I mean, they definitely seemed to hit the panic button once they conceded that goal, but it was a little bit, you know, a little too late. Joseph, do you think there's any tactical things that Madrid could have done differently to
I think
Go ahead, Brent.
I was going to say, I think that one of the things that Jurgen Klopp really did was he understood, you know, Real Madrid, and you can see that over the four legs where basically, you know, Borussia Dortmund was the better team handily, and, you know, in all three of them for the most part. And Klopp said this after their two matches in the group stage and before the Real Madrid-Manchester United match when everyone was talking about how is Manchester United going to stop Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, Jurgen Klopp came out and said, you know, the key to stopping Real Madrid is stopping Xabi Alonso. And he hinted later on, you know, after you stop Xabi Alonso, you've got to shut down Mesut Ozil. And if you do that, you essentially shut down Real Madrid. And that's what, you know, they did in all four legs was they, you know, they focused on Xabi Alonso and made him the focus where other teams see Cristiano Ronaldo and say, you know, we've got to shut him down. And then, you know, then Alonso and Ozil and others dominate the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, I would agree with that because it seems like in every good performance that Madrid has, it's always Xabi Alonso, you know, dictating play from the back, you know, winning, making good passes, distributing the ball well. But when he's been marked out, like you said, no one talked about him playing well, particularly in any of these matches because, I mean, he was marked out and they did a very good job of containing him. I thought in the first leg in particular, Gundogan had a great match. You know, obviously they weren't firing on all cylinders in the same way as they were in the first match of Dortmund, but they did enough to get the job done. They settled down. They kind of got into their rhythm, and then they were really, you know, especially at the beginning of that second half, how many chances they have, you know, it was almost like they turned it around, and you thought the goal was inevitably going to come for Dortmund up until towards the end. It just seemed like it was inevitable, but, you know, you know, it is a goal can change a match, and once they got that goal, it was last chance saloon kind of defending. So it was a bit much. Joseph, do you have any thoughts about that in particular? Anything Mourinho could have done differently?
Well, I don't know. It didn't seem like they ever had a real handle on it, even in the earlier rounds. They didn't seem to have any answers for Dortmund. I don't know if they really could have done anything different with the personnel they have. you kind of play one way.
Right. Well, before we move on to the other match, just in terms of – so after the first leg, Mourinho came out and said, you know, the better team won. After this match in particular, he was very, I don't know, passive-aggressive with the media, deflecting attention, crying about how he's not loved. And, you know, and he's like
– I'm about to cry about that on this podcast.
But you know, people love him elsewhere, as I'm sure Brent knows.
I'm not
loved
on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go
around. Does he have a mute button? I got to find this.
So, any podcasts out there that love me?
You know, he's constantly, not Luis, but Jose is constantly.
I was prepared for some straight criticism right now. I was going to some constructive criticism. Come on, Joseph.
No. A computer class, but no. But other than that, we're good. No, you know, he's always trying to build. It's always either right now, since it's not about the team because they're out of the competition, it seems that he's going back to the me versus them stuff. I mean, it's constant and it's quite tiresome.
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. I feel like he's deflecting the criticism, you know, and like it's true. Well, here's the thing. He should know this because every other manager that's gone before him at Real Madrid, even when they win, if they don't play the style of football that they want, they're not going to like it. And the one thing he could have done to silence them was to win the Champions League for them. They brought him there to do that thing, that one thing specifically. Rather than deflect the criticism after the match, you know, I mean, he's got to own up to it, you know, because here's the thing. The one thing he could have done to fix this issue was to go ahead and win this competition, which most people picked them to win it this year. And they looked like, you know, a very good choice up until this semifinal. But they didn't get it done, and sometimes he's got to own up and, you know, wear the criticism justly. You know, like, okay, my bad. It was my fault. I don't know, Brent. I mean, he's your boy, I'm sure, because you're a Chelsea fan. So
Mourinho's very deflective, though. Like you watch him, like at the end of his Chelsea career, the end of his Inter career, and now the end of his Madrid career. He's always been deflective. Just yeah. Any time criticism is about to be, he's about to be judged for what just happened. He's very deflective, and he's very much a special one in the way that he's different from any other manager that it would in his shoes, except that his team were outplayed, that, you know, he perhaps was underprepared for Borussia Dortmund. Any other manager would probably say those types of things, but, you know, he on the other hand, just deflects. He deflects. He won't accept it. Sorry, Brent, I didn't mean to take your question, but
it's all good. You know, for me, I would disagree with one part of that. I don't think any other manager would say, you know, we did this and we did that. You know, managers are famous for manager speak, and you know, the best of them will often, you know, not admit something went wrong. Alex Ferguson is famous for doing that. You know, deflecting the blame onto the media or taking the blame. Yeah. You know, Wenger, your boy is famous for never admitting that anything went wrong or his players ever did anything wrong. But, you know, having said that, you know, Mourinho is exceptional at deflecting, and that's what makes him good. You know, it's something you could see with this upcoming Chelsea situation where, you know, there's kind of this under the table deal in place. But most people have said it, you know, it hasn't been officially done yet. And so, you know, what's going to happen is if for some reason it doesn't go through, Mourinho is just going to come out and say, well, I never said I was going to Chelsea. It was the media. Everyone else said I was going to Chelsea. So now y'all are the ones who look stupid for saying I was going to Chelsea. And he's the master at that. You know, we don't always like it, but, you know, he's very calculating, and he knows exactly what he's doing at, you know, when it comes to the press. I think the other big difference at Real Madrid is his managerial style, which works so well at Chelsea and Inter Milan is definitely one of, you know, kind of an us against the world mentality. It's, you know, we're the underdogs here and everyone's trying to keep us down. And so we're going to go out and do that. It worked well at Chelsea because that's always kind of been a mentality that that club has had for generations. I mean, it worked well at Inter Milan because, you know, they have to play little brother to AC Milan often. But it didn't necessarily work at Real Madrid, you know, a club that's got everything they want. They can do whatever they want. You know, so to go in and say, you know, we're not the top, we're the underdogs and everyone's trying to beat us down and it's us against the world. And, you know, and that doesn't always work at a club that's not necessarily used to that. So I think that played a small part in it too.
Right. I mean, in defense of Mourinho, in terms of how he plays stylistically, I mean, I knew he brought that same kind of mentality, but not everyone, he didn't get the whole club buying into it, you know, not from top to bottom. I would say that of the sides that he's had, this team probably plays the best football. I mean, it is still his counterattacking style, but, you know, they attack on the counterattack, you know, lightning quick counterattack on the break. And it's been impressive. I mean, I didn't see that when he was at Inter and not the same at Chelsea. But to defend him in that sense, I mean, I thought they've brought a really good brand of football, even though, I mean, I believe the Madrid press want, you know, they've seen this best ever Barcelona side for the past few years, and they're envious. They want to have a team that plays beautiful. I don't know if they want tiki-taka or what they want, but something to that effect. Because you see guys like, I mean, look, they ran Capello out of town even though he brought them titles, you know, because they didn't like the style of football that he brought, you know. So that's always been very important.
Eubankis got fired when he won the Champions
League. Yeah, exactly. You know, they're notorious for being fickle as hell. So, you know, it's not surprising, but it's just what is one of those things that, like, his... It's he's deflecting, which is not surprising, but I don't know. It's just he's making too many excuses for me. You know, he's taken the plaudits and he's earned them, you know. And look, he's gone and won the Champions League with two different teams. He's gotten pretty damn close with two others. You know, that speaks for itself. But
well, I don't think it's going to work if he goes back to Chelsea. That same underdog. Us against them is not, that bullshit's not going to work a second time. And then I'm also, I mean, how many other than Chelsea, how many more places does he have to run to? PSG?
City.
But City is, I mean, they have the most expensive payroll.
Once he leaves.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason he wouldn't go to City is because
they don't care. They're about to buy an MLS team too.
Right.
No, I'm not talking about the money. I'm just talking about that mentality. You could have done that with City maybe before they won the title, but that us against them bullshit is not going to work again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not going to work. That idea is
okay. Yeah, yeah.
But that's the way he manages.
But he's it's not just the us against the world mentality, and we saw that like Joaquin said, it didn't exactly work at Madrid. But what he brings to the locker room is you're either with us or you're against us mentality.
Yeah,
but that didn't work at Madrid.
You saw it. Couldn't get everybody on his side at Madrid, exactly. But at Chelsea, he's worshipped. So I mean,
that ain't gonna work. That shouldn't work again.
It might work. The reasons I think it might not work at Chelsea is there's only a few players left from his old regime. It's all new players that are not familiar with him, and it might cause the same kind of situation that he had at Madrid, which is a lot of players that are not comfortable with him or his coaching style.
But,
and he might not be able to rally them all.
But here's the issue with that is that the people that he had issue with at Madrid were the senior players that have been there a long time. Anybody that's been there with a long time won titles with Jose. So, and the younger guys, it's not even like, even if by comparison at Madrid, I mean, you definitely have big egos at Chelsea, but there's no bigger, you know, group of Galacticos than really Real Madrid almost ever. You know, even in these days of PSG and Man City and all that, there aren't many teams that are more loaded than Madrid. You look at them talent-wise, top to bottom, they basically have world-class players two deep at every position.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know, but also guys, huge stature players, big egos. I mean, you got big egos at Chelsea, but the biggest ones he's already worked with. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is a cocky little
This is a problem we've seen at Madrid for years. This wasn't a Jose Mourinho problem that we've seen at Madrid. Madrid has historically been a place where there has been divided locker rooms. I mean, Raul was notorious for dividing a locker room back in the day. You know, it was either you were on Raul's side or you weren't, and it was always the Spanish against the non-Spanish. And, you know, it's been a problem at Real Madrid for many, many years, well before Jose Mourinho got there too.
Right. Anyone else have anything else to say on Jose or that match, or should we move forward? I mean, the one thing I will say, we should give credit where credit's due. I mean, Dortmund played well enough in the first leg and for most of the second leg that, you know, they deserve to go through. I don't think anyone can doubt their credibility in terms of, you know, earning that result and playing well enough to go through. You know, they did it with a young core, you know, with a group of players that are playing pretty damn well. You know, it was.
Yeah, I agree with that. But when I guess we'll talk about it more when we talk about the other tie. But when you look at the way the two teams progressed, one marauded through one of the greatest sides ever in club football.
Yeah, but this is also a battered side.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, without it was their a side best that player. Gave up and a side that quit and a side that didn't want to be there.
But I mean,
I'm tired of giving Dortmund credit. You guys gave him enough credit. Fuck them.
he's bitter at anyone that isn't Arsenal.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He hates Swansea, too.
It's been a long 8 years.
Hey, Brett, don't say anything good about Swansea. Because Joseph, explode.
Well, so let's move the other match. So Barcelona basically were basically dead and buried after the first tie. They came home. They're playing without Messi. They started Alex Song, which is basically a white flag in the beginning, right?
Yeah, everybody was saying before the match started, it was pretty much a white flag lineup, right?
I mean, not really. It was basically their full strength lineup.
I saw Alex Song being in the lineup as we're not going to get bullied in midfield. Kinda.
No, I saw him there because Busquets was hurt, and that's the only reason. Because I laughed. I mean, because honestly, like, I mean, I know they rate Bartra pretty highly. You know, he's a Spanish under 21 international, but you know, they brought Song in to play center back when needed, also, and they didn't even choose him then. So, I mean, I think that says enough in itself. You know, and then you know, they didn't score anything by halftime. You know, it was over. It was done. I didn't even watch the second half. I walked out to make lunch. I came back, saw that they scored a goal. I was like, all right, I'm done. And that was it. I mean, the game was in the bag. It was over. This side, you know, I'm not – it's an end of an era in a certain sense. But, look, they still won the title this year over a very good Real Madrid team. So it's by no means over. And it's not like they're not going to reinforce or get better next year. So, I mean, I do like seeing –
there's a lot of question marks there. There's a lot of question marks there.
Joseph, I know you're waiting to talk about your favorite team, so please tell me how much you enjoyed watching Barcelona get demolished.
You know, I got to watch it in the calm after, you know, after it was over.
Basking in the afterglow of your wink
session. He can't contain himself. He can't contain.
Right. And it was. The only regrets I have are that Jordi Alba wasn't on the pitch so I could see that fucker kick out at somebody like a baby. I missed that. I really wish that would have happened, so I kind of missed that a little bit. But I think it was just nice to see that the way they've been playing didn't work this time and that they're going to have to do something different. And they will. They'll adjust. But it was nice to see that not work again, you know.
Well, I mean, I think it means they have to change their tactics at some point. You know, they have to find – you got to be able to have plan B, you know. Other managers are criticized. Wenger's been slaughtered for never having a plan B. And I think in particular, I mean, Villanova...
Or having a plan A.
Villanova's been exposed for, you know, being, like, being...
You got chips? What the fuck?
No.
Yeah.
No, he's been exposed for his tactics, not having...
Mom, you know, get out of my room. I'm trying to talk to my friends about soccer.
not being able to change his tactics up. And we look at what he does, and he wasn't able to do anything. You know, look at the first match. He didn't make any substitutions until what time? The 80th minute? I don't know.
Mm.
Yeah, and then they don't have anything to really change what they're doing, right? I mean, it's, you know, like for like, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way Barcelona is right now with that complete lack of depth, especially on defense, and you know, no Messi in there. It really, you know, limits that ability to play that false nine. And like you said, there is no plan B. There's no striker they can put on. I'm not, you know, not suggesting they should, you know, put on some, you know, big hulking Emil Heskey type who, you know, just play long balls up to him. But, you know, they need someone who can actually play a decent striker. And, you know, they don't have that. They don't have depth. And it's a problem for Barcelona because it's a very, very, very slow decline that we've seen. You know, and it comes down to the debt that they've been trying to clear out. Sandro Rosell has been trying to clear out lots of debt, and he's been doing a very good job at it. But what that results in is signing Alex Song instead of signing Xavi Martinez. And it results in we'll bring someone up from La Masia instead of signing Thiago Silva. And you see little things like that are just starting to add up at Barcelona. And then you see a team like Bayern Munich, not to take anything away from them, who is, you know, as technically gifted as any team in the world outside of Barcelona. They play the ball on the ground just as much as anyone in Europe, not named Barcelona. And they have got, you know, these incredibly physical players who can, you know, technically keep up with Barcelona, are fit enough to chase Barcelona around the pitch, and physical enough to bully them wherever they want to.
Well, the thing is, Barcelona also have a monumental debt, you know? They literally can't justify buying him. I know that the Spanish banks keep giving them loans, but they really can't justify making those kind of expenditures because they don't have the money.
Yeah. And they've got to get rid of David Villa, and they've got to do, you know, some other things too. But, yeah, it's one of those deals where they, you know, it, like I said, this debt is costing them. You know, they've got to buy Alex Song instead of Xavi Martinez, who ends up going to Bayern Munich and, you know, dominating, you know, much of that area that Lionel Messi and Barcelona like to operate in.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get a very exciting all-German final at Wembley. I mean, it'll be a great matchup. I think it'll be, you know, well balanced. I mean, these guys play each other all the time. And they've gone back and forth. I mean,
play
for a while.
This weekend, actually.
Yeah, they do. But
yeah,
which can be a big, you know, they're going to be extra, a little something extra on that one, just because they want to set the tone for the final.
I think no one wants to get
it's
hurt.
Either going to be that or
game. Game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be two B teams, is what I would say. You know, it's yeah, they're all going to say
so.
I don't want to show my
hand so.
Before the final.
They've got three weeks before the other match.
You know? Yeah, but neither team has anything to lose or gain from this match. You know, neither team can change positions in the league. And it's just, I think it's a very much don't show your hand, or if you show something, just try and trick them a little bit.
I don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out. I'm going to be watching them closely, though, and making sure to pay close attention. Let's get to our, to a few of our beloved Arsenal. We did have a big match of the weekend, traditionally our biggest match of the season, or one of them. Arsenal against Manchester United. I made the mistake of, well, I don't know, this guy misinformed me. So maybe it was kind of good. I was actually under the impression. I was on a cruise to Ensenada over the weekend. And on Sunday morning, I asked a guy, you know, someone about the result. And they said Arsenal won. So I walked around all day Sunday thinking that we won this tournament. Remember this tournament, this match.
And talking shit.
Talking shit. Honestly. Until Monday. And I got back. I got on the phone with Joseph. And he's like, no, we drew. I was like, you're fucking with me. Like, I'm too hungover for you to be fucking with me like this. Like, I cannot handle this.
It took me 10 minutes to convince him that I wasn't bullshitting him.
And then I was like, well, you know what? At least I enjoyed Sunday like we did win. You know? Because, I mean, I celebrated it. It was great, but what did you guys think of the performance? I mean, because from what I saw, the first 45 minutes were pretty impressive in the most part from Arsenal. I really thought it really came out and stuck it to them. Joseph, any thoughts?
Yeah, all of the first thought is that when United are on the pitch, all offside goals are onside. So
right.
Excellent.
That's the first thing. Yeah,
that's also a Chicharito thing. That's more than just United.
Only at Azteca.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought we looked pretty good the first half. You know, not much to complain about. We should have had more than one. But they also had some opportunities. I think it was typical, but I enjoyed the booing. I enjoyed Koscielny pretty much other than when Robin got his penalty. He had him handled all day. It was nice to see.
You had to love the fact that Van Persie did a wonderful job setting up that first Arsenal goal.
Yeah, it was a nice pass.
He gave the ball in midfield, didn't he? Yeah, I enjoyed that very much. No, I thought we played pretty good the first half, but like Joseph said, we should have had more than one. I don't know if the players were nervous or what. Maybe they weren't expecting to have that many chances at goal, or maybe not having an actual center forward hurt. Go figure.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It was. Go on.
I was going to say, from a non-Arsenal fan's perspective, I have to admit I was pretty impressed with Arsenal's performance, especially the first half of the game. You know, a lot of people say, you know, United looked like they were hungover and they came out tired, which is true. But at the same time, Arsenal looked on fire, and it's the best I've seen Arsenal play in a long time. And I'm not sure where it came from. There wasn't any one person on the pitch who was just, you know, a wrecking ball, destroying in the opposition and you know, creating plays. It seemed to be a collective team effort, which is, you know, something that you don't necessarily see from Arsenal. You saw a lot of players at Arsenal who've been criticized for, you know, not getting stuck in and not moving around, you know, really, really passionate. But it, you know, it didn't seem to hang on during the game. United came out, they played a little bit better. And, you know, and then Van Persie got that penalty, which, you know, you can say it was harsh or whatever, but, you know, it's just the way things go.
It was stupid from Sanya. It was
a penalty.
It was a stupid mistake, and then it was a stupid second mistake.
That's all you got to say about it, guys?
So, that's all I got.
No. Hell no, yeah. That's not all I got to say. No, but like Brett said, our players were flying into tackles. Like, I saw Rosicky getting stuck in. Ramsey was getting stuck in on everyone. Like, he was just battering fools, dude. He was not giving a fuck that day. It was awesome to see. I think performances like that, when you see players like Aaron Ramsey, who's been subject to so much criticism and so much abuse even this season, you see why Arsene believes in them so much. But not that I agree with him on every single player he believes in, but in Aaron Ramsey's case in particular, and Koscielny marking Van Persie out of the game was excellent. Because, yeah, he had to get wide on that play. He had to get away from Koscielny to create anything. And when he did, he earned the penalty.
I don't think that's a big
credit to Koscielny for that.
Yeah, I don't think we could doubt. I think the most important thing we saw was a battling spirit, a commitment, and a dedication that we wish we saw every match. You know, and I mean, they had something extra on it. Look, we're playing facing Van Persie. You know, there's a lot on it. We didn't want to come in our house and win. But I mean, I think in the end, it was a fair result. United had chances. You know, they missed a few in the first half too. Those couple headers that wide and right at that one went right at Chesney. So, you know, all things said, both sides had chances. A point is fair. Tottenham drew, you know, Chelsea won, which we expected. But I mean, Tottenham drawing means we're basically left in the same situation. And we didn't.
Well, real quick before you go on, Joaquin, a friend of mine and Joseph's wants me to mention how anonymous Walcott was after his goal. Just
yeah, I would just like to point out to anybody that if you score a fucking goal, you know, one a game is good. So if you're expecting more than one a game, then perhaps you're not looking at the rest of the fucking team.
Well, you know, and you on that point. Go ahead, Brent.
I said that was it. If you're expecting more than one goal a game from Theo Walcott, you clearly haven't watched Theo Walcott play.
I will remind you that Chelsea is the team he scores against all the time.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I'll go on from that. I'm not going to keep defending him. I didn't think he played well after he had a couple opportunities. He was open for a fucking tap in if Ramsey passes to him.
Yes.
And it's 2-0. But actually, my favorite part of the match, besides Theo's goal, was just the general. Finally, for the first time in 2 years, maybe there was a little bit of chippiness between the two teams. And that hadn't been there for about 2 years because they've just been, well, they're still better than us now, but we didn't have any fight, and it looked like we had more fight this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a more docile affair. But it's good to see that back, you know, and giving a good fighting account for ourselves. We're left with 3 matches. I believe we get all 9 points, which is a big if. I think we're okay. You know, I mean, here's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
If we can't win these 3 games against the likes of who do we have QPR. This weekend? QPR, Wigan, away. And Newcastle.
Yeah.
All Wigan and Newcastle are the ones that worry me. I'm not worried about QPR at all this weekend.
No, I'm not worried about that one either, but still.
Wigan are fighting for their lives, and we always seem to play them.
But you know what? If we deserve to be in the top four, we got to beat these teams, two of which are in relegation zone, or one's relegated. Other one will be relegated, and the other one is barely ahead of that pack. You know, they're still on 30-something points. So there's no excuses. You know, if we miss out, it's all on us. If we get all 9 points and Tottenham win out, you know, Chelsea can still lose one or two and still be ahead of us, you know. So if that happens,
And Chelsea plays Tottenham.
Right, I know, but what I'm saying, even if Chelsea were to lose that match and Tottenham were to win out, I still think Chelsea would make it, but I don't think Tottenham's going to win out. So, just take a couple points off them, please, Brent.
Well, tell the boys. I think, to be honest with you, out of the three teams
teetering Hotspur, yeah.
Out of the three teams fighting for it, Chelsea are probably the more likely to drop out. I mean, they have
look at their points total.
Yeah, but I mean, they have by far the tougher. 3 games.
They can lose one and still be fine. So,
oh, believe me, I'd rather Chelsea.
They do have by far the tougher games.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I said they do have by far the tougher games, but you know they've got you know the points lead. They've got the goal difference lead too. So, as you said, you know even if we finish tied on points with somebody, you know, we've got the tiebreaker in hand with
you're only slightly, you're only a few goals ahead of us.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Remember we scored 7 against Newcastle the first time. So that you're only a couple ahead of us. So we have scored 7 against Newcastle and we have Wigan and QPR. So we should run up the score to make that. If we can own that tiebreaker of the goal difference, then I'm pretty confident we'll be okay. Moving forward, well, like I said, we got QPR at the weekend. It should be a walk in the park. I don't know. What do you see? You see Chelsea have United this weekend, right? Is that Sunday?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Sunday.
Yeah.
And you guys are playing at Old Trafford, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're gonna come out just like against Arsenal. I don't know if they'll have another hangover or whatever, but you know they would love to be the party spoilers for Chelsea. So I think they're gonna give it a good effort. There might be a mixed lineup. Maybe they'll start playing some kids. I don't know. I hope they don't, obviously, but we'll see how it goes with that. Brent, are you worried?
There's no telling what Fergie's gonna do. I'm a little worried. Like I said, there's no telling what Fergie's going to do because you never know what lineup he's going to choose and how serious he's going to take it. And, you know, when you think he's going to play this really, you know, tough, serious lineup, he goes with a younger lineup. And, you know, when you think he's going to, you know, go with a bunch of kids, he'll throw some older guys in the mix. So it can be a bit tricky going to Old Trafford. I'm just hoping that they've kind of said, all right, we've kind of got things wrapped up. There's really not much to play for. The Chelsea 95 points, it's not much of a big deal anyway, but, you know, they can't reach that if they win out. So even right. That's just a minor, you know,
we took care of that.
To say, hey, yeah.
No, he said last week.
It's just one of those deals.
He said last week, we've got an obligation to the teams fighting for a Champions League spot. So he better not dick us and play a bunch of kids. He better bring...
He better at least wait till after the Chelsea.
He put out his first team against us, yes. With the exception of maybe Kagawa and Nani. Well,
Kagawa doesn't even always get in, and neither does Nani.
Yeah. Nani was a good choice against us, I thought.
He always plays well against us.
Except
we're the one
the only team he plays well against.
We're the one team he plays well against. But anyway,
yeah.
He brought out a strong team against us the game after winning the title. He's had, you know, almost a whole week. Well, he's going to have a whole week to rest that team. He better bring out his first team. If he comes out there with his Carling Cup squad.
You never know what he's going to do.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. He does, you never know. It's these games that you think he's going to start a strong team that he doesn't.
Brent, you're not finishing with 11. You know you're going to Old Trafford, so...
I'm just hoping that that comes late in the game and, you know, someone misses the penalty in the 91st minute that they're given.
he who shall not be spoken. I do have to give a shout out to a Chelsea player today because David Luiz scored an amazing goal. Oof. With his left foot.
Oh, God, that was beautiful.
And the thing is, it's like we all pray we could do that with our stronger foot. And David Luiz is not left-footed, but that was an amazing strike.
Yeah.
And I mean,
not just that. I pray I could do that, like, on FIFA. I just want to be able to do that, like, on a pitch by myself, like, with no one around, just right-footed. In my dreams, I'd be happy to score a goal like that.
Yeah. It'd be pretty nice. So,
if you're going to give a shout-out to a Chelsea player, I would like to give a shout-out to an Arsenal player on loan for his penalty. So if you haven't seen it, go check out Santos taking a penalty.
his best Adebayor impression, right?
Right. At 10, or was it, I think it was 10-9 on penalties, and his was the last, and, well, it hasn't landed yet.
Mm. Poor Andre.
Yeah, poor Andre. Well, that's going to have to do it, guys. You can follow these gentlemen on Twitter. Thank you, Brent, for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at @GFT_Brent. You can follow Joseph at @IHateYourClub. And you don't need to follow this other guy. He's coming back. No, you can follow him. Follow Luis on Twitter at @SGGoon.
It was awesome being on the Pinecast a few times. I've enjoyed my time.
Yeah. Well, thank you all, gentlemen, and I'm going to leave you guys with the music today. Unfortunately, the guitarist from Slayer passed today, so we're gonna leave you a little Slayer.
I'm gonna check my email while you do.
Yeah, you would. get cut out. So here's a little Slayer for you. Thank you, guys.